Welcome to the AC Podcast. This is Terry Crosby.
And this is Steve Kim. I'm
Steve
back.
Steve Kim. I can see him in a little square on my computer.
Yeah.
Way out in Alberta.
Well, for our listeners, if you're wondering what's going on right now, Terry and I are doing this over Skype, and this will probably be the new norm. We can see each other. He can see that
he looks the same. He looks the same. No dramatic changes to you, except his parka that he has on. Maybe, I don't know.
It's actually funny because we moved here not last Friday, but the Friday before. As we were leaving Abbotsford, it was raining, and as I was leaving, the thought crossed my mind, you know, there's going to be a lot of things that I'm going to miss about this area. I'm going to miss the mountains for sure, but the rain, I think I'm not going to miss the rain.
Yes. Right?
And so Coquihalla was a little bit snowy, but nothing was sticking. But once we were over the Coquihalla summit, everything was bone dry all the way to Edmonton. And then the following Monday, it starts snowing. We had a few days of sun, and then it started snowing. So I texted my brother-in-law, and my brother-in-law was, summer was fun, eh? I was just like,
That's great.
So far, I'm enjoying the sun.
Hey, man, we have 20, it's supposed to be 25 or 26 today here, and sunny. Yeah.
Yeah, we're catching up too. That's one thing I've noticed about Alberta and probably the prairies in general is that there is very little room for moderation in terms of weather. So it's like it's snowing one day, everything melts the next day, and over the course of the next week or so, we're hitting like 20 degrees.
Yeah.
Right. And then at night, it drops down to something like 3-4 degrees. So there's a huge gap, probably because it's so dry. So
I was looking at the temperatures there in Red Deer for the weekend, and it's looking nice because I'm actually going out there this weekend. We've talked about this, but just visiting my parents, and I have a grad reunion to go to. And so that should be fun. I'm actually going right by your place. I'll be able to see you and your new digs over there.
Yeah, my new digs, including this dungeon that I'm in right now. And I think we've talked about this maybe briefly before, but we did manage to buy a house with a lot of help from my in-laws, buy a house across the street from my brother-in-law. And so thanks, Mom and Dad. This is such a wonderful gift.
What I've seen, you have a nice big yard.
Yeah, good yard and a beginner tobogganing hill in the backyard as well.
Nice.
Just a tiny little dip, just enough for our kids to maybe enjoy tobogganing when it starts snowing next week. And I should also mention, by the way, after I arrived here, I thought I'd check out Beulah Alliance. And so I went there. Actually, somebody emailed me because we said in our previous podcast that, you know, that I'm coming to Edmonton. If you want to do coffee, you know, I'll just give them a shout kind of thing. And so somebody actually did email me.
Nice.
Met this guy, Matt, at Beulah, apparently a longtime listener.
Oh, nice.
So we got together, had a great chat, and then he introduced me to his friend, Stacy, who is also a listener of our podcast and whatnot. And so last Sunday, I was there chatting with her and at Beulah, and so already I feel pretty welcomed, and it's really gratifying to know that there are listeners out there that our name has already gone out this far.
Well, our second amount of listeners that tune into the podcast is from Alberta, right?
Oh, I didn't know that actually.
Yeah. Wasn't it? I thought it was BC and then Alberta and then Japan.
That makes sense.
Right?
Yeah, for some reason.
The amount of downloads, has come from Japan, they make it on the third ranking.
it's probably all the ninja jokes that Andy breaks all the time. You know?
All right. Good to have you back. Let's move into my story that I dig up on the internet.
Yeah, what did you find?
What do you think about this? Tarantula topping draws the brave into North Carolina burger joint. Bull City Burger and Brewery is currently celebrating Exotic Meat Month. Featuring burgers made by everything from alligator, iguana, python, bison, turtle, and insects. But for $30 and a free t-shirt, if you finish the burger, You can have an oven-roasted tarantula put on your burger.
Oh, my goodness. You know what that reminds me of? It reminds me of one Indiana Jones movie. Yes. Do you remember seeing that where Indy and his girlfriend, I assume, go to this place and they're eating all kinds of things, including huge tarantulas. Right?
Yeah.
And then there's this python that gets put on this plate. It's all cooked, and this guy takes a knife and slices it open. There's all these like little, what looks like little snake hatchlings coming out of it, and they're just picking it up and eating it. And Indy's girlfriend just can't take it, so she's gagging.
The picture that it's that's posted on here, it looks green. It's oven roasted, but the final product is like a green, dark, not so nice looking thing.
Oh my.
But hey,
tarantula
so would
is
you do
bad
it?
Enough. Why does it have to be green?
Yeah, I know, right? So for $30, you can buy this burger, but you get a free T-shirt. Steve, would you do it?
Oh, well, just for the T-shirt, I'll do it.
Yeah, you're basically pay for. Oh yeah, yeah.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah, do it for the T-shirt, right?
You'll have to pay me to eat that thing.
Yeah. Oh man, I would give it a shot. I think I would.
Would you?
There is a picture, a video of a lady eating it, and she's kind of picking through it. She's not taking huge bites. She's taking little nibbles of the tarantula.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure. I'm not sure if she's going to finish that one or get the T-shirt.
I guess I shouldn't make too much fun of it because in Korea, there are some things that we eat that just – I remember that one time when I posted that little – I think National Geographic's documentary, just a short one about how Koreans eat little octopi just alive, right? They're not even dead. You know, they just wrap it around the chopsticks, dip it in the sauce, and just eat it. And, oh, man, some people were just so upset about that. And so I probably shouldn't make too much fun of people eating tarantula. You know, it's kind of like the pot calling the kettle black or the kettle calling the pot black, however it goes.
Exotic Creature Month at this place. Well, that's going to be very interesting for, I think they said they had 18 t-shirts and that's all they had. So 18 people are going to wear it in all of the world.
All right.
So we came across an article by Cameron Bertuzzi called Refuting the Indoctrination Hypothesis. He states that cognitive scientists of religion have asked questions like, why do so many people believe in God? What ultimately causes religious belief? So these scientists go out into the field, gather data, and propose hypotheses. And one of the hypotheses is the indoctrination hypothesis. And it basically says that religious belief is ultimately explained by indoctrination.
Yeah, in other words, you're passing it down the generations, right? You're teaching your children, you're indoctrinating them so that they believe what you believe.
Right. Claims a couple of things, that children, those being the most gullible amongst us, blindly accept whatever their religion, their parents and culture brainwashes them to accept. So they are intellectually defenseless, right? So they're inundated with a lot of religious or other knowledge from the parents. And the other thing it says as well is that it claims that without indoctrination, religious belief would altogether vanish.
The word indoctrination has a very negative connotation.
Yes.
Right? And the interesting thing is the word indoctrination comes from the word doctrine, which literally means teaching. And that's how it was taken in the past. The word indoctrination simply meant teaching somebody. But now it has come to mean that you brainwash somebody so that this person accepts a certain belief or a set of beliefs uncritically.
Right.
The key word being uncritically here. And so right away I'm thinking, okay, if I'm going to talk to people about indoctrination, what I will probably want to do is define our terms. Because what I'm thinking of when I think indoctrination might be a little bit different from what that person's thinking of. Granted, the way I think of indoctrination simply as teaching is the more kind of the older way of using that word. Yeah, just saying we probably want to be careful there.
Yeah, I mean, in our culture right now, I think when you hear the term indoctrination, it's almost like a self-evident evil. So A.C. Grayling's, an atheist philosopher, kind of summed it up like this. Remember that all this Christian teacher training is aimed at religious brainwashing of the young, not least the very young. Without brainwashing of the young, religion would wither and die of its own absurdity. The religions, all of them, depend crucially on recruitment by capturing the minds of children. So this is basically, when you talk about indoctrination, it is mainly aimed at us, yeah, bringing our beliefs on our children as they grow up.
Right. I mean, I think there is some truth to that in the sense that, yeah, you know, probably one of the main ways of passing on your religious belief or your religious beliefs, your set of beliefs, is to teach your children. And why do you do that? Well, because you think it's true. You hold to it. You think it's true. Whether you have thought through it or not, you think this is actually true. So, of course, what you believe is true, you want to pass on to your children. What kind of a parent would want to pass on something they know is false, unless it's something benign, like, you know, Santa Claus or you know, Tooth Fairy and things like that, which we know with reasonable certainty that, you know, children will grow out of it. And it's not a serious worldview issue, but something like religion. I mean, religion, simply put, is a take on reality, right? This is some serious stuff.
Right.
This is the kind of thing that's going to shape the way you behave, shape the way you look at the world, shape the way you look at other people. And so, I mean, just the word brainwashing there, I mean, it's a loaded term.
Yeah.
It's the kind of a thing where you take somebody, you insert certain ideas, right? So that this person comes to believe whatever set of beliefs against his will. But, or you take somebody who is gullible, like children, innocent party, who don't know any better. And so then you kind of force these beliefs on them. Here's the problem, though, is that anybody who's raised children knows that this is part of parenting. The word indoctrination, for me, actually comes very close to the word to educate. Really, you're teaching, you're educating them. And when you're educating them, especially when they're that little, they haven't developed the capacity yet to think through things like we would as adults. And so now it is entrusted to you as a parent or to the teachers to pass on what you believe is true. Now, if you want to call that brainwashing, then my thought is that, well, you say that because you think it's untrue. And you know what? That's fine if you think it's untrue. But don't attribute that sort of ill intent on the person doing the teaching. Because the word brainwashing, there's that malice that's kind of connected to it, right?
The article talks about it being a caricature.
Right.
I think about my own, you know, growing up, and it was within the church right from a young age. And I think about my mom and dad teaching me. And I don't think indoctrination or brainwashing at all. I feel like what you were saying, that they were teaching me what was true and not true in their belief. But I think a very big part of being a parent, and we're both parents, is teaching them the tools to think properly, right? Mm-hmm. I think more than us saying, hey, you know, this is what we believe and this is what I'd like you to hear from us, is mm-hmm. how do we think about this question, or how do we think about these issues within our culture?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. It is a bit of a caricature, isn't it? I think Cameron Bertuzzi is bang on here. I mean, sure, there may be certain segments of the religious population where you're not allowed to question. But growing up, I certainly felt free to question certain things. In fact, especially when you're a teenager, right? In fact, this is, I think, really important to recognize. The indoctrination hypothesis sounds almost fatalistic. It's like once you're taught these things, you can't get out of it.
Right.
Which is why it's so important that we don't indoctrinate our children into a certain way of thinking.
Indoctrination doesn't always work, is another point.
That's exactly, yeah, that was another point that Cameron Bertuzzi brought up, was indoctrination doesn't always work. In fact, lots of atheists and skeptics will point to the fact that there are many millennials leaving the church today. And we've written a synopsis on that study, Hemorrhaging Faith. And it was showing that something like, on average, 2/3 of millennials that grew up in the church were leaving. So explain that one to me. Another problem is this. If I were to ask A.C. Grayling, so then what should we teach our kids?
Yeah.
He would probably say, well, we should teach them secularism.
Right.
Right?
Yep.
Now, I could call that indoctrination. If that's all you're going to teach them, right? If you're not going to, you know, when you're teaching, for example, 5-6-year-old kids, you know, these secular ideas, how is that any different from me teaching my children, for example, certain Christian teachings? What's the difference?
I mean, why single out religion?
Right, because there is such a thing as secular indoctrination.
Yeah, lots of people believe lots of different things, and they feel that's truth, right?
Yeah, exactly. And anybody, any Christian parent or Muslim parent, Sikh parent, I would assume, any religious parent who's putting their kids through public system, education system, will likely tell you, yeah, we're concerned about the secular indoctrination. Let's talk about that secular indoctrination and the secularization of, let's say, history. And we mentioned this briefly, where somebody like René Descartes. When we talk about René Descartes in school, I don't remember ever hearing anything about Descartes' religious beliefs.
Yeah.
When we talk about Galileo, I don't remember anything about him being a Christian. I don't remember anything about us talking about how Sir Isaac Newton was a Christian. John Locke, and I'm sure, you know, Andy is shouting hallelujah right there, but it's just,
I mean,
it's just not a very fair presentation of the issue.
No, but we do have to recognize there is some harmful indoctrination that does go on, you know, with certain cults and things like that. But that's a minority, I think, really, you know, within this whole process of teaching our kids and teenagers. But it is a very limited cases.
I agree with you. Those kinds of indoctrination process where you're not allowed to think about anything else, like say, well, I won't name any particular groups or sects or whatever. But I would agree that those are in the minority. And the indoctrination hypothesis might be helpful in trying to explain religious diversity. But insofar as people try to use the indoctrination hypothesis to show where religion originates, mm-hmm. how did it come to be?
Right.
It just fails, right? Because yep. There's that regress problem that the author of the article pointed out. You can't just keep kicking the can down the road. At some point, somewhere, the buck has to stop.
There was no children before that.
kind of right. Thing, right? So, you know, it's, right. So if I received my religious beliefs from my parents and they received their religious beliefs from their parents, so on and so forth, where does it start?
Right.
Right. Not to mention in the case of my own family, my grandparents and my father used to be Buddhist.
Right.
They switched. So it's not that kind of fatalistic kind of a thing either. And, even in explaining religious diversity, I'm like, yeah, you know, I guess if you were born in Saudi Arabia, likely you're going to be a Muslim. And if you're born in India, you're likely to be a Hindu. But what does that all amount to, really?
Yeah.
I guess I want our listeners to understand that the indoctrination hypothesis, even if it's true, says nothing about whether a particular set of beliefs is true or not. Otherwise, you would be committing a textbook genetic fallacy where you try to invalidate a belief or set of beliefs by pointing at how it came about.
Right.
Just because I was born and raised in a culture that believes that the earth revolves around the sun, that it somehow invalidates the idea that the earth does revolve around the sun.
I mean, I want to make a point, too. I mean, when we think about the Christian teachings and doctrines that we would pass on to our kids, really, how damaging is some of these doctrines? You know what I mean? Like, I think of our, mm-hmm. you know, command to love God and love our neighbors, right?
Mm-hmm. I don't ever remember being taught, for example, go out and steal to your heart's content, go right. out and just kill your neighbors for no good reason. No, I don't remember learning anything like that.
Yeah. It just doesn't follow that it's damaging to the kids. I mean, as they move on in life, I mean, there's no reason that they would change their minds about the things that we taught about them as well, right? Which we already talked about.
I think it's just this somebody like A.C. Grayling, because I understand that he's a bit more of a kind of a Richard Dawkins type of an atheist, thinks, you know, religion just poisons everything, to borrow Christopher Hitchens' words.
Right.
But that's his assumption, right? Because religion, as far as he is concerned, is an evil thing by nature, right?
Yeah.
It's not just a kind of a benign thing. It's something to be actively eradicated. Maybe I'm misrepresenting his position. If he's anything like Richard Dawkins, then I would assume that that's what he believes, because Richard Dawkins has made it very clear on a number of occasions that, you know, he would like to see a religion eliminated.
Yeah, on his point. I mean, does religion just create all the evils, you know?
That's exactly what I want to ask an atheist like A.C. Grayling,
yeah.
is, hey, look, I understand that a lot of evil has been done in the name of God and in the name of religion. A lot of things have also been done because of things like racism, nationalism, Marxism. The bloodiest century so far in our recorded history is the 20th century, and it was mostly committed under atheistic regimes, right? Like Maoist China, right?
Yeah.
And Joseph Stalin and so on and so forth. So, yeah, evil has been done in the name of religion. My question to you then is this a problem unique to religion? And if not, what do you think is the common denominator? And I think in the breakout session that we played on our podcast a couple of weeks ago, Andy Bannister pointed out, well, the common denominator is humanity, right?
Yeah.
We do evil things.
Yeah.
And so then my question becomes, well, I understand you're upset about the evils caused by religion, or at least evils that are done in the name of religion, whether appropriately or inappropriately, whether it represents the religious faith accurately or inaccurately. Let's just set that aside for a moment. My question to you is, what are some good things that have come about as the result of religion? And that's where I would want to actually hear some responses, because if our skeptic friends can't tell us anything, not a single thing, then I would say, okay, sorry, who's indoctrinated?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Let's think about this a little bit more in a more nuanced way. What are some good things that have come about as the result of religion?
There seems to have been a little bit of a change of heart a little bit on Richard Dawkins' part. I just want to bring in another article that I ran into, and it says, mm-hmm. Richard Dawkins, benign Christianity is about to be replaced by something worse, Islam. So it goes on to say, Richard Dawkins does not welcome a Europe future without Christianity. So he was a big proponent of the indoctrination hypothesis at one point in time, but now mm-hmm. he believes that Christianity is a better option than Islam, mm-hmm. right?
He says that because, for one, the kind of Islam that he's thinking of is probably radical Islam, right? Because, or at least he's thinking of the radical Muslims.
Yes.
Because most Muslims, just an average Muslim that you come across on the street, mostly speaking, they're very kind, generous, hospitable people. They're wonderful to be around. But it's the suicide bombers, and it's the certain really violent sects of Islam that ruins everything. But I also understand that Islam is, by its very nature, a political religion.
Yeah.
And so that's probably why Richard Dawkins is a bit reluctant to see Islam coming into Europe. And so culturally speaking, he identifies himself as a Christian.
Yeah.
Now, he's not a Christian in any spiritual sense of the word, but just culturally.
That's an interesting little switch. I mean, he's recognizing that there is almost some good within Christianity that keeps it at a better standard than Islam, right?
Yeah.
He says, there are no Christians, as far as I know, blowing up buildings. I am not aware of any Christian suicide bombers. I'm not aware of any major Christian denomination that believes the penalty for apostasy is death. So it's the extreme stuff that he's talking about, but he seems to think that Christianity has a place, especially in Europe right now, because of this onslaught of Islam.
There are very few things that I actually agree on with Richard Dawkins, but I would agree with him on this point. Now, I think he has too simplistic of a view of Islam, but I would agree with him. Yeah, let's continue to preserve, and I would say even continue to pass on Christianity. Where we're probably going to differ is the kind of Christianity that he is thinking of is just a cultural mode, if you will. But the kind of Christianity that I want to see being passed on is the kind of Christianity that has some spiritual teeth that actually demands something of you because it commands itself as the truth about the world. It's the real, true take on the world. So that's the kind of Christianity that I want to see passed down. In fact, if you read through the Bible, like in the Old Testament especially, there is a great emphasis that's being put on, especially in the early days of Israel being formed as a nation, there is a great deal of emphasis on passing on the traditions, yeah. Right? And so during Passover, for example, the Lord says, when your children ask you, what is the meaning of this? This is what you need to tell them, right? And they're constantly building little monuments. After they crossed the Jordan going into the promised land, they created piles of rocks so that the latter generations can remember what happened. And so there is this duty that's put on us to pass on our traditions, to pass on our religious identity.
Yeah, I appreciate your definition of Christianity and having those spiritual teeth. That's yeah. Good. I really appreciate that. And I think that's what we try to do here at Apologetics Canada, is to equip you to have those spiritual teeth to go out and talk with those in our culture and those that live next to you, your neighborhood. We want to be encouraging that way for sure. Yeah, I think we should wrap up there. We appreciate our listener support. And to those who have left reviews on iTunes, thank you so much. I just want to read a couple of the reviews from a few of you. Joel's iTunes, he says, great to have a Canadian apologetics resource that addresses so well the cultural changes of our time and the timeless truths of Christ. Thanks, guys. Joel, we appreciate that. And one other from Jay Jansen, 6753. Great podcast. It's my favorite. Conversational style apologetics. If you're a Christian, you must listen. If you're not, it will let you know that what Christians think about our current affairs. Smart, well-read, ordinary guys talking about how the Christian worldview intersects with the greater society. So there's just a couple reviews there that we appreciate you leaving on. If you appreciate this podcast, rate us and leave us a review on iTunes and tell us what you think about the show. Or maybe if you just want to tell us how bad you think the new host is. Either way, we'd love to hear from you. Thank you for joining us, listeners. The Apologetics Canada podcast is a ministry of Apologetics Canada, and we will come back next week with more things to think about.
You practiced that a lot, didn't you?
It's a great ending.